Early ballots are arriving in mailboxes, and Arizona's primary elections are less than a month away. In advance of that, we've been inviting in the candidates running in contested races to talk about why they're running and some of the key issues in their contests.
You know, it's been 24 years since Arizona has had an educator at the helm of the Department of Education.
I am a proud American Muslim woman.
That although our election system is the greatest in the world, it is still far from perfect.
We need more options for our young people, more counselors, more social workers.
Common Core's been repealed by the State Board of Ed, and now we have new standards.
And we know what's possible if we keep moving forward.
The current shortcomings of the office have left our system vulnerable to cyber attacks.
We're gonna fly, fight, and win on Election Day with your help.
Today, Jose Torres, the first-time candidate, is an engineer and mathematician. He's running for office for the first time, facing off in the Democratic primary in the 5th Congressional District. The House seat is currently held by Republican Andy Biggs. Torres is emphasizing his problem-solving skills. I spoke with him recently and started by asking him why he decided to become a political candidate.
I went to a town hall with Andy Biggs, who is my current representative, and I was thunderstruck. And I walked out of there saying, you know, just a regular person can and should give the people a choice, because, you know, people are pretty fed up with Congress. And I identified a lot of things that I heard at that town hall. You know, this is the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And unfortunately, I'm somebody that had to, you know, go do something.
Let's talk about some specific issues then. So healthcare reform, President Trump got elected, a lot of Republicans got elected with the promise, or the premise even at this point, I guess, is more than a promise, that they would repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act known as Obamacare. That didn't happen, though there's been some chipping away at it. Do you like a considerable amount of the Affordable Care Act? Are there things you would like to tweak?
The number one thing we have to remember is that this is policy that's going to affect whether people live or die. So my first priority is to go address and provide stability so that we can just put in fixes. Because let's be honest, right now we have next to zero political consensus. Right now, Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, is the law of the land, and it's being dismantled, and that is not improving people's outcomes. And so let's go improve that. Let's go stabilize that. Okay, so their mantra was repeal and replace. Well, I don't remember having any discussions about what the replace looked like. What does it do? What does it not do? You know, when I was in business school, they asked a question, said, does a company want every customer? Apple doesn't. Apple knows they only want customers that are willing to pay that premium. Now, when you look at the healthcare market, one of the consequences is that people who can't pay or are too expensive, effectively what happens is they're like a piece of paper that you just go and throw over your shoulder. Those are Americans. I'm not comfortable throwing them away.
Immigration reform, I want to ask you about that, because that has been, there was the phrase comprehensive immigration reform, which we don't hear at all anymore because people decided it was just too complicated to do all these things. President Trump wants the border wall, he keeps saying. Then we have both parties talking about the DACA recipients and how important they are, and yet not a lot of action is being taken to help them. What reforms would you want to see to make the system more humane, more fair, but also have a component of border security to it?
So my fundamental values coming, and I'll come to that in a second, is fairness, opportunity, and respect. So is it fair for people to jump the line? No. But nonetheless, let's create systems that improve the fairness, the opportunity, and respect for people. So immigration requires these fundamental three things. Solutions do, okay? You have to address the legal, because people are in an extra legal status, whether they stayed, and a lot of people here have just overstayed their visa and then couldn't reassert legal status effectively, or whether they crossed, or you know, what have you, right? You also got to address the social, because there's a perception, and it's hard to document otherwise, that people who are here illegally are taking all kinds of benefits or ballooning the deficit or whatever. You know, my history on that has been that it's really hard to get data on people who are trying to hide their data. Let's live in a what if, okay? What if we made it simple to identify if someone just straight up, yes or no, has the legal right to work in this particular jurisdiction? All right, and then you can offer guest worker programs. Here's how you go check. You walk in and you say, I want to see everybody's legal right to work, which you should have with you at your job every day. all right, so now, you know, companies can hire. Because we read about this every so often, that a meatpacking plant got raided and, you know, now, okay, great, but somebody still needs to work at the meatpacking plant. And if we're just screaming about immigration without actually talking about social, economic, and legal together, well, that's comprehensive immigration reform. And I don't care. It doesn't have to be called comprehensive. But if all we're doing is talking about the legal, well, we can look at how well the war on drugs turned out. And today, one of the things we need to talk about more is all the Americans were losing to opioids. Another example of when all you do is scream about one piece of the problem and use it as a wedge, decades later, Americans are still paying the price and we're still losing people.
All right, let's segue into the economy. You mentioned your MBA, and I'm curious as to whether you think, obviously there are some people who are very excited about what the tax reform plan did. We recently saw GDP numbers for the last quarter were quite good. Mm-hmm. But at a strict level in terms of how people view the economy from a general sense, a lot of people think about their jobs, they think about their wages, think about whether they're working full-time or whether they have to take on multiple gigs. Do you have any thoughts about how the economy in the U.S. should work and how much the government should be playing a role in that?
Oh, generally, I'd like to see it out of the way. The government is naturally going to have a role in things like Social Security, right? So I do want to make sure that the people who are being left behind are talked about, mm-hmm. that we work for realistic, economically feasible solutions. I'm an engineer, man. Engineer does numbers. Give me data. In data we trust. You know, in God we trust. All others bring data. Give me data, right? So, like recently, I was asked, "Do you favor a $15 national minimum wage?" And I say, "Well, I love the idea. Let's talk about these obvious limitations that I think we can all agree on. Number one, $15 is nothing to live on in Los Angeles, whereas 3 hours outside of Omaha, Nebraska, it's a king's ransom." So, you know, something that I was a proponent of was, instead of forcing a $15 minimum wage on a national level, say if you have a dependent, so now you have a kid and you know, there's a non-working spouse or whatever, but you have a dependent, then, and you have a minimum wage job and you're working 40 hours a week or, you know, close to it, why can't you benefit from an earned income tax credit that would not overly burden small businesses or employers, mm-hmm. but still allow that person to meet certain minimums? Like they talk about, okay, I've got to be able to afford an apartment, maybe a small car, and still get to work, right? Now, at that point, you've got somebody who's economically viable, they're contributing to society, they're paying taxes, or they're you know, helping businesses grow without forcing a one-size-fits-all, you know, so engineer.
We hear a lot from people who want to know about bipartisanship. What would you like to see in terms of working across the aisle? Are you that type of person?
So literally, my candidacy is based off of this question. I don't want to be a politician. I want to be the best public servant I can be. And I want to give people who look at Congress and say, with exasperation, they throw up their hands and they say, why can't you people, speaking to the congressmen or congresspeople, do your job and go home? Look, as a voter, what I would love to have, picture this. Every voter walks into the booth and thinks at every office, and there's a lot of them we vote for, boy, I have two good choices in every single office. And if that sends me home from Washington sooner, then good. Good. You know why? Because I'm not here to be there forever. I'm doing this job because no one else is going to do it the way I know it needs to be done.
Jose Torres is a Democratic candidate in the 5th Congressional District here in Arizona. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.